welcome to the Drive Podcast. Ted Henley is off for a couple of days. I'm your guest host, Jalen Nye. We have some great conversation on our show today, so let's get right into it.
Well, our next guest wrote an opinion piece recently saying, we've reached a tipping point with tip creep. Let's get into it with writer, filmmaker, and journalist Josh Fried. Josh, welcome to the show.
Thanks a lot.
All right. So what was it that sent you over the deep end the other day and sent you on a mission to write this article?
I think the tipping point for me is I hauled this case of beer from the grocery store fridge to the cashier for $25. The cashier flips the credit card machine around and wants a 20% tip from me. And I realized I was being asked to tip this guy for doing nothing but asking me for a tip.
So you carried a case of beer from the cooler to the counter, and he wanted a tip for that.
He wanted a tip. Yeah, I was tipping him for asking for a tip. He hadn't done anything, right? He's just standing there. And I it was just a symbol of what I've been feeling, and a lot of people are feeling the last year or two, which is that everybody wants a tip suddenly. And I'm a good tipper in general. I'm a 20% restaurant tipper standard. But now we're being asked tip. You know, everyone wants a tip. Grocery clerks, dry cleaners, self-serve gas stations want tips. Well, you do all the work, and they should tip you.
Why do you think it's happening? Why do you think that this tip creep has happened, that it's showing up everywhere?
Well, partly, I think, in the pandemic, we were all tipping very well. There was a big boom in tipping because the workers became sort of frontline hazard pay we were giving them. But more importantly, I think these new machines have popped up everywhere. Little squares you attach to credit cards, and everybody's replaced cash with these machines. And the machines are just set to 15-20%. So plumbers, I know of a plumber who handed this machine over to a friend, a $4,000 bill, it wanted 15 or 20%.
Come
That's
on!
$500 tip for a plumber, right? So it's just become sort of standard. And I believe in tipping, but this is nuts. You know, it's just, and when they've taken away, I guess I would also say they've taken, because they use the automated system, they've taken away most places the old tip jar. I used to throw 50 cents or a loony in at a coffee shop. Suddenly I'm being asked for $2 for a tip, right? Machines don't have it. So it's just it. And I can tell you that I am not alone, because I have received, since I wrote that column on Saturday, I have received over 10,000 hits across the country and about 3,000 letters. And I have read them all, and I have never written a column in decades that everyone agrees with me. Not a single human being has written to say they disagree. Everybody is fed up with this craziness of, I mean, a lot of people support, you know, tipping restaurant waiters and staff and chefs and people who work. But if they don't move, if they're standing behind a cash, if they're standing somewhere and they don't have to move, what are you tipping them for? Right? Mm-hmm. They have to do something. They have to walk 5 feet. Go get me a candy bar. Do something. But if you're not walking, you're not doing something, I can't really, it's not fair to ask me for a tip. It makes me feel guilty. I feel bad. Many of us feel bad. Some people don't. And remember, they turn the machine around and they're staring at you as you look at the 15, 20, 25%.
Yeah.
So then you try to find the other button. Where's the thing? It says no tip, right? You're thrashing around. There's people behind you, you know? Some people just say, oh, just say no. But, you know, I don't know. I have a lot of respect for service people, and I have to constantly make this differentiation. Am I getting service, or is nothing happening?
So, Josh, that's what I wanted to ask you about. So when you're faced with that situation, like when you hauled your case of beer over to the counter and the guy flipped it around and said, okay, 15, 20, 25%, did you say anything to him? What did you tip him?
I thrashed around in this case, that particular case, I thrashed around looking for the no tip option, and I found the no tip option and was able to give him nothing while he stared at me. But there have been several times in which I couldn't find the no tip option, and there were people behind me in line, and they were all getting impatient, and out of just politeness for them, I had pressed the 15% button and realized that when I walk out the door, I've just given a $4 tip for buying 5 breads, you know, that I picked up off the counter. Not him, right? So I have a reflex of tipping, just my nature, but I'm trying to suppress it now. I'm trying to say, don't tip. And I'm starting to carry around little plastic bags of change with me all the time. So I get stuck, you know?
And again, and I think we need to make it clear here. You're not saying, okay, I'm not going to tip at all, but you're going to have to provide a service to me to get that tip. I'm not just giving it to you because you flipped the machine around. There has to be something attached to it.
Absolutely. Look, I think service people are underpaid. I'm very, very ready to tip anybody who does me a service. I try to do that, but they have to do something. Okay, if you don't do anything, I don't think you can guilt me into giving a tip anymore. During the pandemic, you could, because I felt bad for everybody. People were suffering, and, you know, people behind the counter were really threatened by COVID for what it was dangerous. But serious COVID is over. They're just handing me the bill. Please don't include a 15% tip. And I'm going to have to learn to just say no. I'm going to join the just say no movement. But in restaurants, I don't care what the service is like. Restaurant people are paid less than the minimum wage because they're supposed to get tips. I don't think it's a favor I'm doing them. I always tip restaurant people. They work hard and they provide a lot of service. And they have to be friendly with a lot of people who are a hassle. So I don't question that one at all. I mean, they have to deal with people whose spouses are driven crazy by them. Okay? So I feel bad for restaurant people. I've got to spread the wealth. But there's a limit, man. When I carry the beer to the fridge and you press a button,
yeah,
I don't want to give you a tip.
Enough's enough. And you know what? I just have to say, you talk about feeling guilty, and I mentioned it off the top when I was introducing you, is those little messages that say, you know, brilliant or excellent or just okay. I mean, I don't need to feel guilty. Stop making me feel guilty.
Well, it's more than that. You're being marked on your tipping, right? It's like a high school. Oh, you know, well done. Excellent tipping. Good tipping. Not so good. And if you only give 10%, by the way, you only get like... What happens if you get 5%, they call the police. I'm not sure.
Well, Josh is putting his foot down when it comes to tipping with no service. And I think a lot of other folks, certainly by the all accounts on my text line, Josh, are joining you in the Just Say No movement. Thanks for chiming in this afternoon. I sure appreciate it.
Hey, please. Hey, I want my tip.
Yeah. Oh, it's in the mail. I'll send you a couple of loonies.
Thank you.
Take it easy. Mike Flanagan is a professor of wildland fire at the University of Alberta. Hi, Mike. Welcome back to the show.
Good afternoon, Jalen. Great to be with you.
Yeah, it's good to be with you. What are you seeing so far with this wildfire season that we've been having? And what do you expect as things heat up here over the next week and a half?
So this year's been a little bit below normal. Typically, May is our busiest month in Alberta. Alberta's a bit different than the rest of Canada. And this May was a bit cooler in weather, but it's been warming up. And as you mentioned, the forecast is hot and dry, at least until the weekend. And so this is prime time for more fires. The recipe for a wildfire is simple. You need three ingredients. The vegetation, the stuff that burns, we call it fuel. Second, ignition. People and lightning are the two common ones. And the third is hot, dry, windy weather. So we've got the last one. If we can get a handle on no more human-caused ignitions, that will be a great help. The fuel's drying out, and so it's primed to go.
Wouldn't that be ideal, though? But we know over and over again, what was it, I think, last year that, 67 or 70% of the fires that were started in Alberta were human-caused?
Yes, usually it's close to 50-50 in Alberta and for Canada, but though it's seasonal. The ones in spring, like May, like I mentioned, mostly human caused. Summer are mostly lightning caused. And for this hot spell, we're not expecting too much lightning, which is a good sign. So if we get those human caused ignitions down, we'll be in good shape. Next week looks a little wetter. So, you know, if we can just hang on and, you know, keep vigilant until early next week, we should be in good shape, except for maybe the extreme northeast and the extreme southwest. It looks like it's going to stay dry there for longer periods.
Mike Flanagan joining me this afternoon. I just want to cycle back to something you said off the top of our conversation. I had mentioned that that across the country, wildfire season typically hits its peak in July. You said in Alberta, though, that usually is in May. Yes. Why is it May here and not July, like other places?
So, think back, okay? 2011, Slave Lake, uh-huh. May.
Yep.
2016, Fort McMurray. Beginning of May.
Yep.
2019, Shaquet Creek, May. So there's a couple of reasons why May is so busy in Alberta. One is there's a lot of activity in the forest, and whether it's industrial activities or camping, you know, like we wait all winter to go camping, mm-hmm. and then May we go camping and campfires, et cetera, et cetera. And also the weather pattern sets up in May, so we get those strong winds, dry. It may not be necessarily hot. Sometimes it is, like Fort McMurray was record-breaking heat. Shaquet Creek was hot, but Slave Lake wasn't all that hot. It was just dry and windy. So the weather pattern set up in May in Alberta to make it prime time. The rest of Canada, you're right, June, July, and BC's even August is very busy for them as well. So it's kind of seasonal.
When it comes to predicting fire, Mike, what inroads have we made on that front? And in maybe saying, okay, well, you know, a couple weeks out, a couple months out, maybe even a year out, this is where trouble spots could be.
Yeah, excellent question, Jalen. You know, weather forecasts, well, they're good to about a week, more or less. Okay, so we have fire weather forecasts. So if we know where the extreme fire weather will be, then we can move resources there. And we have fire occurrence prediction models that tell us where to expect lightning-caused fires and human-caused fires, just based on, for the human-caused fires, just based on history, where the campsites are, where the roads are. That's generally where the human-caused fires are. What's really important here is that extremes drive the fire business. In Canada, 3% of the fires burn, 97% of the area burned. So, you know, Shaquet Creek fire, the Fort McMurray fire, these were huge fires. Those are the problem fires. So if we can forecast those extreme conditions, now we're using artificial intelligence and machine learning to try and highlight those 3 days, 5 days in advance. And we're making inroads, but we still got some work to do.
I was going to ask you about using AI and machine learning and if that was something that was being used now.
Absolutely. It's, you know, anytime you have large volumes of data, machine learning, artificial intelligence, it's much better picking out patterns than we are, okay? So we have lots of data, whether it's weather data or fuel information, what type of fuel, how dry it is, all important aspects of the fuel. Then we're in better shape to say when and where to expect these extreme conditions. We're also looking at seasonal forecasts. They need more work. We're much better at the, you know, up to 5 to 10 day forecast. That's what we're focusing on right now.
You said that there's still a long way to go when it comes to, you know, the predictability or not the predictive about being able to predict. What more still has to be done?
So I'm a weather guy, but the weather stuff's pretty good shape. As I mentioned, forecasts are good out 7 days. Our fuel information, you know, we have to know what type of fuel it is, and things change. You know, sometimes there's harvesting, sometimes there's a fire goes through. Sometimes we need to know how dry that fuel is. And we have weather stations every 40 or 50 kilometers. But in the summer, you go, and like yesterday, I'm in Edmonton, and it was raining in one spot. I was on the road, and it was dry in another spot. You know, we have to see that finer spatial detail to see how dry the fuels are, how much rain was received. And we're just not there yet.
Mike, one more question for you here. Are communities, are municipalities becoming more aware, doing a better job at protecting their infrastructure from wildfires? I mean, I think, you know, Fort McMurray was an eye-opener for a lot of communities. Are we seeing municipalities since then making better choices when it comes to where subdivisions are going to go, what kind of trees are planted, all that sort of thing?
I think we're making progress. And one area is human-caused ignitions. Canada-wide, they're dropping. And that's probably due to education, fire bans, and things like that. communities, building materials, community planning, programs like Fire Smart to help communities and homeowners make their more resilient to wildfire. We can't fireproof our communities, but we can do things to make them more resilient. And we are making inroads. It costs money. And Alberta, British Columbia, and other provinces are providing money to Fire Smart our communities. So these are important steps forward.
Mike, always appreciate you making time for us on the show here this afternoon. Thank you for this. And as much as I like talking to you, I hope that we're not talking to you again this summer.
Okay. Well, maybe next year.
Maybe next year, Mike. Thank you. Take it easy.
Okay. Cheers.
Hey, I'm Ted Henley. Thanks for listening to The Drive Podcast. Please tell your friends about what you're hearing. Also, please rate, review, and subscribe. This podcast, of course, is free wherever you get your favorite content. If you want to hear The Drive with Ted Henley live, then please tune in or stream the show weekday afternoons from 3 to 6 on Global News Radio 770 CHQR.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink. All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone, like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.